You know what people are freaking out about? There's a balloon, a Chinese spy balloon over Montana. Oh my God. And now they know where we keep the cows.
That's why.
I got the feeling there's something right.
Oh, no, it ain't.
I'm so scared in case I fall off my chair. And I'm wondering how I'll get down the stairs. Clowns to the left of me, jokers to the right. Here I am, stuck in the middle with you.
I am. From Pacifica Radio in Los Angeles, this is The Bradcast, as heard on KPFK, 90.7 FM in L.A., 98.7 in Santa Barbara, 93.7 in San Diego, 99.5 FM in Ridgecrest and China Lake. Also in California, in Red Bluff and Redding on KFOI and Round Mountains, KKRN. Up in Oregon on the Central Coast on KYAQ, Cottage Grove's KSO, Eugene's KEPW. Lanchester, Pennsylvania's W News, Maui, Hawaii's KAKU, Columbus, Ohio's WGRN, Palinville, New York's WLPP, Rochester, New York's WRFZ, down in New Orleans on WHIV, out in Gallup, New Mexico on KNIZ, Concord, New Hampshire's Concord, New Hampshire's WNHN, Fayetteville, Arkansas's KPSQ, in Seattle on KODX, Janesville, Wisconsin's WADR, and Minneapolis, St. Paul's, AM 950, KTNF. We also stream coast to coast and around the globe for you every day on the internets on the Progressive Voices channel, Netroots Radio, Radio for Humans, NicoleSandler.com, Radio Free Brooklyn, Workforce Rising, No Lies Radio, Verdant Square Radio, Detour Talk, and most of your favorite podcast sites. Blanketing Planet Earth, I'm Brad Friedman, your friendly investigative blogger, journalist, troublemaker, muckraker, and all-around swell fellow, says me from bradblog.com. Now, officially in our 20th year of troublemaking, muckraking, broadcasting, blogging, and everything else. Thank you very much for joining us today. We've got a lot to get to today, including, if time hopefully allows, some of your phone calls, as it is our last chance to hear from you before President Joe Biden's State of the Union address on Tuesday night. But the horrific news out of Turkey and Syria continues this afternoon, with Turkish authorities now saying more than 2,300 people have died from a devastating 7.8 magnitude earthquake near the southern border with Syria, bringing the overall death toll in both of those countries now to more than 3,400 last I was able to check as we go to air today, though that tally has been quickly rising throughout the day. It's expected to continue to do so following Monday's pre-dawn quake and a bunch of large aftershocks that have continued to flatten buildings and rock wide swaths of southern Turkey and neighboring northern Syria, a region already, by the way, in strife thanks to Syria's continuing 12-year civil war and refugee crisis. Rescue efforts continuing in both countries at this hour. Desi Doyen, you've been keeping a close eye on this horrific disaster. Anything else we should know at this hour?
Well, yes. Unfortunately, the death toll is now officially above 3,800. Mm. That's through the BBC after those two major earthquakes that hit southeastern Turkey. The epicenter was about 16 miles east of the Turkish city of Nur. Doggy. So first, it was a massive 7.8 magnitude earthquake that hit in the pre-dawn hours on Monday. That was, as you mentioned, near Turkey's border with Syria. Seismologists say it was one of the largest ever earthquakes recorded in Turkey, and survivors said that it took about 2 minutes for the shaking to stop. And then 11
minutes. That's a long time.
That's a very long time, which gives a lot of time for buildings to begin getting damaged. And then right after that first 7.8 magnitude, about 11 minutes later, it was followed by a 6.7 magnitude aftershock. And then about 12 hours later, another magnitude earthquake of 7.6.
Oh,
so
man.
That's been three major earthquakes and dozens more aftershocks that have continued. I mean, there's videos that have been posted to social media that are showing multi-story buildings just collapsing like a stack of pancakes in seconds.
And when I check the weather out there as this was all ongoing. It was really cold. It was really rainy and snowy in the region. That did not help.
Yes, temperatures are hovering near freezing and have been throughout the day. And there's an ongoing storms that have been just inundating the region for days now and are expected to continue. And the BBC reports that that is seriously hampering rescue efforts as rescuers are trying to comb through mountains of rubble in, as you said, freezing and snowing conditions to look for survivors. Now, the U.S., Europe, and about a dozen other countries around the world are sending aid and support to help with the rescue efforts, including specialist teams, sniffer dogs, and, you know, earth-moving equipment and stuff. And the World Health Organization does warn that the death toll is likely to climb. It could increase as much as eightfold as they find more victims in the rubble. And, of course, there are tens of thousands of victims that are now displaced in this freezing weather and in need of food, water, and shelter. And it's even worse in war-torn northern Syria, where millions of refugees are living in camps on both sides of the border with Turkey.
And, you know, this is something that we talked about the other day. We had this three, 4 weeks of rain, these atmospheric rivers that were coming into Southern California. Imagine had we had a huge quake.
In the middle
of that
series of storms. Yes, I know.
At the same time.
They call that a compound disaster. And, of course, having one major natural disaster severely tests both regional and national and local emergency response. Having more than one at the same time is something that emergency management experts worry about. Because that is obviously a problem with climate change that's increasing the frequency and intensity of extreme weather events that can strike at any time, as can any of these other major disasters like earthquakes.
Yep. We will keep our eyes on that throughout the hour. If there's any noteworthy developments, Des, jump in and let me know. In the meantime, as noted, I had hoped to take some of your calls a little bit later on President Joe Biden and what will be his second official State of the Union address to a joint session of Congress on Tuesday. 9 p.m. Eastern Time, 6 p.m. Pacific, I believe. I'd still love to hear from you in a bit if you would like to line up now as far as what you hope to hear from President Biden in his remarks this year. What you hope to hear, what you think you'll hear, what you think you won't hear, what you fear you will hear. Any of your thoughts on the speech in advance of the Tuesday night speech, 818-985-5735 is our phone number, 818-985-KPFK. If you would like to line up right now, I do need to hit some other news items here. First, most importantly, apparently, I want to make sure that everyone is okay. And that you survived the great Chinese spy balloon crisis of the past few days in good order. I know many of you folks, particularly on the political right, had quite a harrowing weekend from all of the danger and menace that you personally face from this tremendous threat to our very way of life here in the U.S. I hope you are all okay today. And hugging your loved ones yet again, knowing that you have survived this grave threat from communist China. And I don't know why, but it looks like neither President Biden nor Vice President Kamala Harris will be resigning in shame and ignominy today, despite statements and demands from folks like South Carolina's Republican Congressman Joe Wilson on Saturday, who declared, quote, the catastrophic Chinese spy balloon spectacle clearly threatened American families from Alaska to my home community in South Carolina and confirms President Biden and Vice President Harris should resign, unquote. They should resign? Really? Unfortunately, as loony as Joe Wilson is, he was hardly the only one reacting ridiculously in response. As the Department of Defense reported on Saturday, after ending our long 2 or 3 day national nightmare, a U.S. Air Force fighter safely shot down a Chinese high-altitude surveillance balloon Saturday, according to Secretary of Defense Lloyd Austin in a written statement. President Joe Biden ordered the action last Wednesday, but it was delayed until the balloon was no longer over land and was over water off the south coast of South Carolina in order to ensure no Americans on the ground were harmed, which sounds reasonable to me. Austin said, quote, the balloon, which was being used by the PRC, or People's Republic of China, in an attempt to surveil strategic sites in the continental U.S., was brought down above U.S. territorial waters. Now, reports today indicate that the debris from the remnants of that spy balloon have now been retrieved and are being taken back to the FBI lab at Quantico. Austin said on Saturday, quote, today's deliberate and lawful action demonstrates that President Biden and his national security team will always put the safety and security of the American people first while responding effectively to the PRC's unacceptable violation of our sovereignty. U.S. officials first detected the balloon and its payload on January 28 when it entered U.S. airspace near the Aleutian Islands. It traversed Alaska and Canada and then re-entered U.S. airspace over Idaho. An unnamed senior defense official, according to the Pentagon, so this is likely a civilian political appointee versus a uniformed officer, said, quote, President Biden asked the military to present options, and on Wednesday, President Biden gave his authorization to take down the Chinese surveillance balloon as soon as the mission could be accomplished without undue risk to civilians under the balloon's path. Military commanders determined that there was undue risk of debris causing harm to civilians while the balloon was over land. Again, sounds reasonable. An F-22 Raptor fighter from Langley Air Force Base, Virginia, fired one Sidewinder missile at the balloon and took it down. It fell approximately 6 miles off the coast in about 47 feet of water. No one was hurt. And yes, the crisis was ended, at least in reality, if not in GOP media circles, where they finally found something new to complain about in hopes that you would not notice that they actually have no plans to deal with any of the previous crises that they ran on last November, like crime and inflation and manufacturing and supply chain issues, etc. And that they are, hope that you don't notice, that they are currently on a trajectory to tank the U.S. and global economies by refusing to approve an increase in the amount of money that the U.S. may borrow in order to pay its current bills for all the stuff that Congress and presidents of both parties have for years agreed to pay for. You know, the debt ceiling. The Pentagon's news release, meanwhile, notes that long before the weekend shootdown, U.S. officials took steps to protect against the balloon's collection of sensitive information, mitigating its intelligence value to the Chinese, at least according to this Department of Defense news release. What those mitigating factors are, and if they actually happened, of course, we don't know currently, to my knowledge, but the unnamed senior defense official said the recovery of the balloon will enable U.S. analysts to examine sensitive Chinese equipment. Quote, I would also note that while we took all necessary steps to protect against the PRC surveillance balloon's collection of sensitive information, the surveillance balloon's overflight of U.S. territory was of intelligence value to us, according to the official, who said, quote, I can't go into more detail, but we were able to study and scrutinize the balloon and its equipment, which has been valuable. The suggestion here, and we heard similar from other experts over the weekend, is that ultimately this incident will end up yielding more information to the U.S. than it does for China. Now, I can't confirm that myself either way, but that is the claim that U.S. defense officials at least seem to be making here. They note the balloon never posed a military or physical threat, but that its intrusion into American airspace over several days was an unacceptable violation of U.S. sovereignty. The official added that it is not the first time in recent years that this has happened. Chinese balloons briefly transited the continental U.S. at least three times during the prior administration. The Trump administration, that according to the official, but that was not announced publicly by the prior administration, either because they did not know about it at the time or because they chose to keep it secret from the American people for whatever reasons. At this point, we don't know. While Chinese officials admitted the balloon was theirs, they said it was a runaway weather balloon. though they do seem mighty angry about the U.S. downing this weather balloon and collecting its remnants for study. U.S. officials insist the balloon was for surveillance purposes that, quote, purposely traversed the U.S. and Canada, and we are confident it was seeking to monitor sensitive military sites. So I hope that all Americans can now breathe easy for the time, for the moment, of course. I hope you're okay after this great crisis of the last several days. And I do hope to open up the phones, like I said, in a bit. So if you've got something to add to all of this, you think that I am missing something here, that I have been too snarky about all of this, or not snarky enough, please feel free to ring in and let me know. 818-985-5735. Some electoral news.
Well, wait, hang on. Before continue on, I just want to weigh in and say that I think that it was very interesting that Republican elected officials in several states kept suggesting that their voters, their residents, would get out their guns and try to shoot down that balloon themselves, even though it was at 60,000 feet, about much farther away than I think any rifle could reach.
Yeah, they got pretty big guns out
there. They're not that big.
You sure? Okay. Well, apparently you are sure, because they didn't succeed in shooting it down
with their rifles.
With their
little
pistols. All right. As I noted, some electoral news today before we get to your calls. Despite falling precipitously over the past 6 months or so, after an historic 8% annual inflation rate for the bulk of 2022, the Federal Election Commission announced new contribution limits late last week for the 2024 election cycle. The Bipartisan Campaign Reform Act of 2002, yes, during the George W. Bush era, naturally, apparently allows the commission to increase contribution limits every odd-numbered year to reflect changes in inflation. Since inflation skyrocketed in 2022 to the highest level in decades, unprecedented contribution limit increases reflect that historic economic heat, according to Open Secret News Today. Of course, there is something quite perverse about all of this. When inflation rises, people, most people, certainly the poor and the working class people, in theory, they have, because of their rise of prices, they have less money to spend on other things, you know, because things are more expensive. However, if you are wealthy and you've got plenty of money, well, good news. You can now contribute even more of it to political campaigns. Now, of course, this applies to everyone. Even struggling poor and middle class folks can contribute more to political campaigns if they like under these new rules. But as luck would have it, those folks actually have less money to be able to donate thanks to inflation. But rich people should have no problem. Nice how this works, eh? Individual donors can now give $3,300 per candidate per election. That's an unprecedented $400 increase from $2,900 during the 2022 election cycle. That means between the primary and general elections, one single donor can now give a candidate up to $6,600. $6,600. That's $3,300 per election, or as much as $9,900 if a race actually advances to a third election, to a runoff election. Now, do you have that much money to give to a political candidate? Because I'm guessing the answer for most folks listening today is no. Is this getting obscene? Yes, but it has been obscene for a long time, and it gets even worse. The contribution limit to national party committees also jumped from $36,500 per year to $41,300 per year. And I know there are a lot of poor and middle class folks out there who will look forward to maxing out that donation to their favorite political parties. Am I right? But that's not all. The annual maximum contribution to special national party committee accounts, for example, to help pay for party conventions and such, calculated as three times the contribution limit to the party committees. Well, that increased from $109,500 to $123,900. Let's all start writing those checks, shall we? In effect, the changes could allow an individual donor to give the three national party committees and their special accounts nearly $2 million per party per election cycle. And while all of this will likely have no effect directly on folks like you and me, I can think of a few folks who will almost certainly be delighted about this news. The network of donors and activists groups led by far-right billionaire Charles Koch will oppose Donald Trump for the 2024 Republican nomination, mounting a direct challenge to the former president's campaign to win back the White House, they have announced. Now, I'm guessing there are some folks hearing that news with their head kind of exploding at this point, trying to figure out, is this news good news or is this news bad news? The Koch network, they are terrible people with way too much money to spend, thanks to tax shelters and tax dodges and not being taxed nearly enough and getting huge tax breaks, by the way, from Republicans in the Trump administration. But now the Koch network is opposing Donald Trump, and he's terrible too, right? Well, I would argue that while Donald Trump may be terrible, he is terrible and should be in jail and perhaps could be in jail before the first votes are ever even cast in the 2024 primary, he would still be, at least in my opinion, among the easiest to defeat of all of the Republicans believed to be preparing to run for the GOP nomination in 2024. Either way, for a small group of millionaires and billionaires to have this kind of control over the course of our elections remains, yes, obscene. Emily Seidel, the chief executive of the Koch Network's flagship group, Americans for Prosperity, wrote in a memo released publicly on Sunday, noting, quote, "The best thing for the country would be to have a president in 2025 who represents a new chapter." So a Republican who is not Trump, in other words. I promise you that if Trump wins the nomination, nonetheless, they won't, they're not going to be dumping hundreds of millions of dollars to support Joe Biden or whoever the Democratic nominee turns out to be. The three-page missive from AFP repeatedly suggests that the group is taking on the responsibility of stopping Trump. With Seidel writing, quote, "Lots of people are frustrated, but very few people are in a position to do something about it. AFP is. Now is the time to rise to the occasion," she writes. The move marks the most notable example to date of an overt and coordinated effort from within right-wing circles to stop Donald Trump from winning the GOP nomination for a third straight presidential election. All of this, according to the Washington Post on Sunday. Some Republicans have grown increasingly frustrated with Trump after disappointing midterm elections in which he drew blame for elevating flawed candidates and polarizing ideas. But absent a consolidated effort to stop Trump, many critics fear that he will be able to exploit GOP divisions and chart a course to the nomination just as he did in 2016. While the memo did not name a spending target, AFP's affiliated Super PAC spent more than $69 million in the 2022 cycle, according to the FEC disclosures. But in past presidential cycles, AFP has spent considerably more than that, to the tune of hundreds of millions of dollars. And I believe we can expect the same thing coming up in 2024, especially now that the spending limits have been raised all across the board. The Koch network now joins the Club for Growth, another of the largest right-wing outside spenders and several of the party's biggest individual donors in signaling their opposition to Trump's current campaign. Others, however, are holding back for now, though I do promise, again, that if Trump wins the nomination, they will all be back on board in an instant. Don't worry. This salvo from the Koch Group, Americans for Prosperity, according to the Post, one of the biggest spenders in American politics, marks a reversal after they sat out the past two presidential primaries. That said, they spent heavily for Trump-led efforts, for instance, to promote that $1.5 trillion tax code overhaul in 2017, which netted hundreds of billions of dollars for corporations and the wealthy, like the Koch Network folks. But in actuality, in presidential elections since 2015, these groups like AFP, while they have sort of stayed on the sidelines since 2015, when it comes to the presidential race and Donald Trump. In fact, back in 2015, they identified five other presidential candidates who they were willing to support. They all fell to Trump. But of course, the group continued to spend, yes, liberally, to buy members of Congress and state officials in the meantime, even if they didn't enter the presidential race when Trump was in it.
They continued to spend liberally.
That's
I'm sure
what I
the
said.
Reporters were also having fun with that word.
Oh,
too.
No, that's me.
That's you.
That's me. You're
of course
welcome.
It is.
By the way, among the people already very close, among the potential candidates for 2024 that are already very close in various ways to Koch world, former Vice President Mike Pence, his former chief of staff, used to oversee the political operations at Koch. The Secretary of State Mike Pompeo. He was backed by the Koch political machine back when he represented Wichita, Kansas as a congressman. That's where Koch Industries is headquartered. Nikki Haley, former South Carolina Governor Nikki Haley, she's expected to announce her bid in a week or so, for the presidential nomination. She attended a Koch donor conclave in recent months. And, of course, the Koch-backed Koch-backed super PAC supported Ron DeSantis before he won his GOP primary back in 2018 on his way to becoming the now two-term Florida governor and a frontrunner for the 2024 GOP nod. And of course, even though the millionaire and billionaire funders of the dark money AFP groups can already give as much as they feel like, thanks to the Citizens United decision by our corrupt far-right U.S. Supreme Court, well, now they can give even more money directly to these candidates and to the Republican National Committee if they feel like it, because of which is surely very convenient for them, because the FEC has now raised the limits. And don't get me wrong. Again, I just want to, be fair so nobody gets the wrong idea. Yes, you can. Anyone listening to me here, as long as you're a citizen, can also give millions of dollars legally, if you like, to these candidates and to these parties. Of course, you have to have millions of dollars to do that. But other than that, these laws are totally neutral, right? One more story before we get to a break and we come back with hopefully some of your calls on any or all of this and what you would like to hear from President Biden's State of the Union address on Tuesday night. Just a bit more evidence here for those who are still allowing yourselves to believe, to be duped, that Donald Trump actually had the 2020 election somehow stolen from him, or that any of his campaign folks actually believed that that was the case either then and now. Well, a newly released audio recording obtained by the Associated Press offers a behind-the-scenes look at how former President Donald Trump's campaign team in a pivotal battleground state knew that they had been outflanked by Democrats in the 2020 presidential election. But even as they acknowledged defeat, according to the audio recording, they pivoted to allegations of widespread fraud that were debunked repeatedly by election officials and the courts. The audio from November 5, 2020. So this is just 2 days after the election. This audio is now surfacing once again as Trump is seeking the White House while continuing to lie about the 2020 outcome and Joe Biden's win. This took place in Wisconsin. The Wisconsin GOP political operatives, in a strategy session, again, 2 days after the election, they even praised Democratic turnout efforts In the state's largest counties, they appear to joke about their own efforts to engage black voters. Ha ha! According to this recording that was obtained last Thursday by the AP, the audio centers mostly on Andrew Iverson. He was the head of Trump's campaign in Wisconsin. And in at least one instance, he's heard on the tape not only conceding that Trump lost in the Badger State, but saying out loud that they're going to pick up Trump's false claims and pretend that the election in Wisconsin was somehow stolen by Democrats. Standing by, they said, to help the communications team to, quote, fan the flames and otherwise stand by for, quote, any stunts that we need to pull in support of it all.
Here's the drill. Comms is going to continue to fan the flame and get the word out about Democrats trying to steal this election. We'll do whatever they need our help with. Okay, so just be on standby in case there's any stunts we need to pull.
So, in case you couldn't hear that, here's the deal, he said. Comms, communications team, is going to continue to fan the flames and get the word out about Democrats trying to steal this election. We'll do whatever they need. Just be on standby if there's any stunts we need to pull. Iverson, by the way, is now the Midwest Regional Director for the Republican National Committee and no doubt still on standby for pulling any stunts that his party needs him to, even if it's making false claims about a stolen election in order to undermine American democracy itself. AP notes that the copy of the recording of the full meeting came from a former campaign official and a Republican operative who recorded it. The operative did not want to be identified out of concern for personal and professional retaliation, but said they came forward because Trump is mounting a third attempt now for the White House. But what's interesting in this tape is that they admit that they did not win. They knew that they lost. So when he's talking about fanning the flames, they know about, you know, stealing the election being stolen from them. They knew they were lying. Wisconsin, of course, was a huge part of Trump's victory back in 2016 when he won the state, smashing through the so-called blue wall in the upper Midwest. But then Biden defeated him by nearly 21,000 votes in Wisconsin in 2020. And that result has withstood independent and partisan audits and reviews, as well as lawsuits and recounts demanded by the losing Trump campaign in the state's two largest and most Democratic-leaning counties, where just 2 days after the election, there was no discussion of Trump having won the state during the meeting of the Republican campaign operatives there. Instead, parts of the meeting focused on discussions about packing up the campaign offices, writing final reports. At one point on the recording, Iverson is heard praising the GOP's Democrats' efforts while admitting the margin of Trump's defeat in the state. He offered, quote, hats off to the Democrats and their get out the vote efforts in liberal-leaning Dane County. Elsewhere, the recording centers on GOP Republican outreach efforts to the state's black community, with the operatives at one point laughing over needing, quote, more black voices for Trump. Iverson also said references their efforts to engage with black voters, noting, quote, we ever talked to black people before? I don't think so. And of course, everybody in the room laughs. So there's your Republican Party. Keep that in mind next time you hear them pretending to support minority voters and candidates, their minority outreach.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of amazing to me that, you know, these Wisconsin Republican operatives, they knew that they were lying. And so, of course, naturally, the Wisconsin Republican Party promoted them, the people who were spreading these lies.
Sure, of course, failing up as they do. For some of today's breaking news on the earthquake and in Turkey and Syria, and on the balloon nonsense. But for all of that, I had finally actually hoped to get to a story today that I've been working on trying to get to for a couple of weeks now regarding some elections here in California that are still being legitimately contested after it turns out. We found out in late December in California that a number of ranked choice voting elections which I have long opposed for various reasons that I'll get into when I finally do cover the story. But a ranked choice voting election in Alameda County in the Bay Area was tabulated incorrectly. Several of them were on the computer tabulators that they use to tally these complicated the RCV ranked choice voting, the crazy algebra that nobody can follow that goes with those elections. And at least one losing candidate appears to have actually won his race when it was counted correctly with ranked choice voting, in yet another instance of computer voting systems reporting winners as losers and losers as winners in 2022. We covered another similar failure just about 2 weeks ago in New Jersey recently. That was just discovered 2 weeks ago from the November 3rd election of last year. It's also continuing to cause problems. I hope to get back to that story in detail this week, as I've tried to for the past week or two. But I just wanted to toss that out there for now, so you know what you might be able to look forward to on the broadcast a little bit later this week, if the radio gods are with us, even with this week's State of the Union. And speaking of, let's take a quick break. We'll come back with some of your calls in advance of Tuesday's State of the Union on, if you'd like to talk about that, or on anything that we've discussed above, including that dumb balloon story. Call in, tell me how it is not dumb, how I am missing something about it. 818-985-5735 is our phone number, 818-985-KPFK, or how you think old Joe Biden is doing as he heads into his third year in office, what you would like to hear from from the president on Tuesday in the State of the Union, what you fear you'll hear from him, 818-985-5735. And I've got a new poll that is out today from Washington Post and ABC News that kind of blows my mind and frankly underscores, as I see it, the failure of our corporate media, with a huge majority of Americans believing that Joe Biden has accomplished, quote, not very much or, quote, little or nothing during his presidency to date. Really? Do you agree with that? Do you disagree? Give me a call, 818-985-KPFK on that or anything else on your mind. I'm Brad Friedman, and you are listening to the world-famous Bradcast.
What the public hears on the public airwaves matters. At the Bradcast, we do our best to bring you accurate news and analysis on the issues that actually matter, and we do it all independently without corporate or political influence. But we can't do it without you, now more than ever. Please help us stay on your public airwaves by going to bradblog.com/donate to help keep us going. That's bradblog.com/donate. And thanks.
On a road to nowhere, but we'll be riding on it with electric vehicles to help save the planet, so there's that at least. Welcome back to the Bradcast. Brad Friedman from bradblog.com. About to go to your calls. If you want to ring in, now's your chance. Don't wait till the end. 818-985-KPFK. 2 years into a presidency that the White House casts as the most effective in modern history, President Biden is set to deliver a State of the Union address on Tuesday to what Washington Post today describes as a skeptical country, with a majority of Americans saying they do not believe that Joe Biden has achieved much since taking office. That, according to a Washington Post ABC News poll that is out on Monday, the poll finds that 62% of Americans think Biden has accomplished, quote, not very much or, quote, little or nothing during his presidency, while 36% say he has accomplished a great deal or, quote, a good amount. So let me lay my cards on the table here. Put me in that minority who says he has accomplished a great deal. In fact, I'm happy to argue that no matter how you or I may feel about him or might have liked him to do more or liked him to do something different entirely, to suggest that he has not done a great deal when, in fact, he's accomplished more in the first 2 years of his presidency than perhaps any other president going back to at least FDR, it is either a ridiculous failure, the fact that a majority of Americans do not know that. It's either a ridiculous failure by the White House and the Democrats and or our corporate media who have failed to inform the American people about what Joe Biden has accomplished. And that is true whether you like what he accomplished or not. Feel free to disagree with me. My number is 818-985-5735. If you're listening in our live listening area in Southern California or anywhere across the great internets, 818-985-KPFK. I am curious where you fall on that question of how much Biden has accomplished or not and what you might like to otherwise hear him say or even fear that he will say in his second state official State of the Union address on Tuesday night. 818-985-KPFK. According to the new Post ABC News poll on many of Biden's signature initiatives, from improving the country's infrastructure via a bipartisan $1.2 trillion bill that was passed in 2021 to making electric vehicles more affordable in the 2022 Inflation Reduction Act to creating more new jobs in 2 years than any president has ever helped to create in 4 years. Nonetheless, majorities of Americans say they do not believe he has made progress, which blows me away. Actually, what it tells me is that the media are failing to do their jobs. It's their jobs to inform the electorate, which clearly they have not done. It also is obvious a failure for the White House and Democrats to not get that news out. But again, it's the media's job to inform the public about what your public officials are doing, again, whether you like those things or not. And frankly, Joe Biden has done a whole bunch of things, including, you know, more diverse appointments to the executive branch by far than ever before, the lowest unemployment rate since 1969, more and more diverse federal judges appointed to the bench than either of his first two predecessors in their first 2 years. $1.2 trillion infrastructure bill I mentioned, legislation that invests some $400 billion in combating climate change, $52 billion towards boosting domestic manufacturing and bringing American jobs such as the manufacturing of computer chips back to the U.S. He's put a cap on the price of insulin for seniors, $35 a month, an annual cap on out-of-pocket pharmaceutical expenses for seniors, $2,000 annually, the first federal gun safety legislation in about 30 years, and much more. Is that not enough? Well, maybe it's not. Would you have liked to see more? Okay. Something different? Fine. But let's not pretend it didn't happen. Give me a call, 818-985-KPFK. Let me go to Vaughn in Granada Hills. Hey, Vaughn, welcome to the broadcast.
Hello. Thank you.
Sure. Thank you.
I had a couple comments, just like what you were just speaking about. Mm-hmm. Biden, I think he's doing okay, but I wouldn't mind a younger person. I don't know who they could put up that he could throw his weight behind. And
okay, fair enough. Let me ask you a question on that, Vaughn. Fair enough, and you know we're not to the 2024 elections yet, and you can oppose him if he runs in favor of a younger person, that's fine. But do you agree with the majority of Americans, 62%, who says Joe Biden has not accomplished very much or little or nothing?
No, I don't understand that at all. I took a picture of that graphic because I don't understand that.
But, yeah.
Okay. A couple of things. I just wanted to say about the Chinese balloon, and I was just having to look at the paper online, mm-hmm. and I saw this the title saying Republicans criticize U.S. response to Chinese balloon, and mm-hmm. I was going to say, well, that's exactly the same line it would have been if they'd shot it down.
Right.
that they would have come up with, like, oh, now look at you spread all this debris all over the place and you hurt somebody.
Right. And we have no idea what kind of viruses were in that, what kind of health disaster he just released above Montana. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. So it wouldn't, they wouldn't have had to change that title. They just would have changed the body of it.
Yep, yep.
But, so, and then I did want to say that I did hear, I think, that same current person from Normat, about that they didn't know about the three balloons during the Trump era, and that was even weirder. That I don't know how, when did they find out about them if they didn't know about them for that whole time?
Yep.
And but that they did think that was something they were going to have to work on.
Yep.
Their domain infrastructure, whatever.
Their balloon detection technology. Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly.
All right.
So that is one other thing, and then I just want to say, in terms of Biden's speech, I would just like it to not be like a campaign speech. So they can, I don't know if he could say anything without them accusing him of that, but
yes,
I would like to not think it's that.
Okay.
And I don't mind him not saying, seriously, no joke. That would be the only other thing.
He says that a lot, doesn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah, which is how you know he's not telling the truth. Yeah,
or he's uncomfortable. But.
Right, exactly. Hey, thanks, Juan. I appreciate that
Thank
call.
You. Okay.
818-985-KPFK. Let me go to where am I here? Daniel in Gardena. Hey, Daniel, welcome to the broadcast.
All right, Brad. I jumped the gun. You came out with what Biden doing. I'm like waiting for the receipt. I was on hold. You did come out with some accomplishments.
Oh, you had originally called in to say what are his accomplishments, right?
Yeah. I was waiting to list them, and I was like, wait. It's a great build up. But then as I'm waiting on hold, you did get into a list of his accomplishments, but that's not going to motivate the base. I'm sorry. I think it was nothing for the working class. That's all.
Really? What would you like to see? What would you like to see for the working class? I mean, especially.
He should have came to one of his campaign promises out the gate.
Like what?
With the bailout, he was a promise. X amount of dollars. I forget the promise. It was a promise. He ran on giving us X amount. He got an office that we didn't get. We got left with him.
Well, no. Let me clarify, Daniel, for you, because you did get that money that he promised. He had called for, I believe it was $16,000 for all Americans. Not $16,000. $1,600 for all Americans. And the Republicans and Donald Trump went in and they gave $400. And pardon me if my math is slightly wrong here because I've lost track of it. But what Biden ended up doing then was giving the rest of it. So he said Americans should each get $1,600. Republicans and Trump gave $400. So Biden came in and gave $1,200 to everyone else. He kept that promise, Daniel.
Oh, well, fair enough. But that's Trump on the table. And I don't think he's offering anything to motivate the Democratic base. That's all I'm getting at. But I'll let you respond off the air.
All right. Thanks, Daniel. I appreciate that call. And whether he's, you know, given the base something to motivate them or not, I would argue that if the base doesn't know about what he has done, if the base does not know that, yes, he did keep that promise, if the base does not know that he has invested more into climate change, technology, mitigation, everything else, than any, not just any U.S. president, but any entity on the planet ever, with $400 billion at least going towards moving us away from the dirty fossil fuel companies towards clean, renewable energy. Well, I don't know what it is that would motivate the base.
Well,
yes?
And I think part of the problem is that a lot of these major pieces of legislation, I mean, which would be huge if they passed really in any session of Congress, just because of the sheer volume of both investment and the programs putting forward to help transition the economy away from fossil fuels. So you've got the Bipartisan Infrastructure Act in 2021.
Yep.
Then you've got the Inflation Reduction Act, like you said, the single largest investment moment in world history, pretty much, in climate action. And you've got also, remember, the CHIPS Act, the Semiconductor Act, that brings back semiconductor manufacturing and other types of electronics manufacturing to the United States. Those will take time to build. You have to, it takes time, like more than a year, to build a manufacturing facility.
It does. But the fact that the American public doesn't know about it, I would argue, is a failure of someone's. I'm going to chalk it up to the, frankly, to the corporate media, because it really is their job to let people know what the what your public officials have done and not done. And again, you may not like those things that Joe Biden did, but you need to know what they are so you can therefore then, you know, vote against them. But to, you know, he's forgiven up to, what is it, $10,000 or $20,000 worth of student loans for America. I mean, that seems like a pretty big deal. Now, it's being fought by Republicans, but he is trying to give back to forgive up to $20,000 of student debt across the country. And you want to tell me that there's nothing for his base in there? Well, only if they don't know about it. And that's what we try to combat every day. 818-985-KPFK is our phone number. Yes,
yeah, I just, and also I remember last week there was a focus group, a Republican focus group, where they had discovered that when they actually explained to the Republican voters in this Republican focus group that what the actual Republican House agenda was, the people did not like it. They did not know about it until they heard about it. Then they decided they did not like it.
And actually, that was not Republican focus groups. They were independent, some leaning Republican, but they were independent focus groups in three different states. I believe it was Wisconsin, Virginia, and Texas, as I recall. They had no idea what the Republicans were up to either, which works well for the Republicans when the American people don't know what they're up to. And again, another failure, I would say, of the corporate media. Let's go to, who was that? Alan in Laguna Niguel. Hey, Alan, welcome to the broadcast, sir.
Thank you. Two things. I wholeheartedly agree that Biden has had a good domestic run and that the media hasn't covered it. However, I have to give him an F minus in foreign policy now that the doomsday clock is at 90 seconds and we're continually hassling with Russia and China and not doing enough to stop the war in Ukraine.
What else would you like to see him do to stop the war in Ukraine, Alan?
Quit sending all the military equipment there.
You think that would stop the war?
It would start something. It would start, of course, that has to be followed by negotiations, but there's never any mention in the, well, again, the media, whenever they talk about Ukraine, it's who's giving what weapons to them, who's behind in their commitment, and there's no talk about what any diplomatic effort is to halt the Ukraine war.
Well, is that a failure of the media, or is that a failure of the lack? Are you saying that the lack of diplomatic efforts? Because I do believe diplomatic efforts are ongoing, but I would suggest if you say we should stop sending weapons over there, that somehow that is going to lead to peace talks. What it's going to lead to, Alan, is Russia overtaking Ukraine. And then moving on to further countries and, you know, fascism getting another hand above democracy in the heart of Europe.
I'm sorry, but this is starting to sound like the domino theory. You let them take Ukraine. They're going to move on to somewhere else next.
Right. That's right. That's exactly right. Are you willing? Let's say, never mind moving on elsewhere. Are you okay with Russia taking over Ukraine, a sovereign nation, an imperial power taking over another nation? Because I suspect you were against it when it was the U.S. doing it in Iraq. So why would you favor Russia, an imperial power taking over a sovereign neighbor?
I did not say I favored that.
Okay.
And if you think that Biden has done everything he can to put an end to this war or to have a negotiated end to the war, then that's your opinion. But I believe that obviously the Russians had no business doing what they did.
Right.
At the same time, we are doing nothing on the diplomatic front.
That's actually not true, but I appreciate your thoughts on that.
What are we doing?
Actually, the U.S. has been calling for quite some time for there to find a negotiated way out of this, saying that this is not going to be settled on the battlefield. In fact, I was looking back at the State of the Union this morning from last year, from a year ago. Joe Biden promised, we are not going to send troops into that battle. We will support them. We will support the Ukrainian people. But he has kept his promise on that. Alan, I got a bunch of people I want to try to get in about 2 minutes left here. I hear what you're saying, and I appreciate how he hung up on himself. All right, 818-985-KPFK. And that's fine. You don't have to agree with me. Let me go to Deanna in Santa Monica. Hey, Deanna, welcome to the broadcast.
Hi. We have a problem with not really Republicans. They're fake Republicans, and they're anti-everything. They're up to a lot of skullduggery in jail.
You keep hitting your face. Deanna, your face keeps hitting the phone. I gotta hang up on you, Deanna. I wanted to hear her call, but her face kept hitting the phone. I think she was saying they're not even Republicans. They're fake Republicans. Not sure. Let me go to Leah very quickly. Hey, Leah, welcome to the broadcast.
Hi, Brad. I love you. Two things I want to say.
Okay. Go.
First of all, we received, some of us received a quote unquote stimulus money, $1,200. Okay. But my question is, how much did the Biden administration, how many billions did he give away to the ultra rich? That's one thing. The second thing.
Leah, hang on. When did he give away billions to the ultra rich? In what program are you talking about?
I asked how many billions did he give for the peanuts that we received? How many for the peanuts that we received? How much did he give away to the ultra rich?
And I'm asking you, Leah, I'm asking you, which program are you talking about in which he gave away hundreds of billions?
I said we receive peanuts.
Okay.
Domestically, as citizens, okay? Those who needed help and those who did not, okay?
Okay.
We receive peanuts overall. And I'm asking how many billions of dollars did he give away in subsidies, et cetera, to the ultra rich?
Fair enough. Leah.
I'm concerned about.
I got to go because I'm up against the top of the hour. Give me a call next week. I do appreciate the call. I'm sorry. Because I do have to get to Mo, who has been waiting for an hour, and he can do it in 10 seconds. Go, Morris in Long Beach, brother.
Let me tell you something. There ain't nothing that Joe Biden can do. Ain't no policies. The greatest thing that Joe Biden did was he pushed back on fascism. There ain't no policy he can come up with that's greater than that. Joe Biden is a hero because he pushed back on fascism when there was no man in this country that could have did it. Talk to you later.
Thank you, Mo. And thanks to my producer, Desi Doyen, to my board ops today, Mark Maxwell and Terry Guy, and to all of you for spending a portion of your day or night with us, especially you callers. Sorry I had to give you a short shrift at the end there. We'll try to do better next week. You can drop me email if you like. I'm bradcast@bradblog.com. On the Facebooks and the Twitters, I am The Brad Blog. Also on the Mastodons at The Brad Blog. We will see you there and at bradblog.com, hopefully tomorrow. And right here, I'm Brad Friedman. Good luck, world.
Listening to the Bradcast. We are 100% listener supported, thanks to listeners like you who drop by bradblog.com/donate.